bringing you the truth behind the news. Welcome to The New American.
Welcome, everyone. I'm Paul Dragoon. And next to me here in the studio is my colleague, Steve Bonta. He's the executive senior editor of The New American magazine. So we are very glad to have you. And today we have a special guest, and we're going to be talking about money. We're going to be talking about the possible collapse of the U.S. dollar, how the elites plan to use that against us, and what he's been doing to restore or to help restore sound money in America. So Kevin Freeman is considered a world-leading expert on economic warfare and financial terrorism. He has consulted for the U.S. House and Senate, the CIA, DIA, FBI, SEC, Homeland Security, the Justice Department, as well as local and state law enforcement. Kevin, it's an honor to have you.
Thank you, Paul. Good to meet you, Steve.
So, Kevin, what is the condition of the U.S. dollar? Where is it heading? And should we be concerned?
Well, the best way to describe it is put a picture in your head of Wile E. Coyote, who's run off the cliff. Nothing's underneath, but he's still fighting with his feet moving forward, unaware that he's left the mountain. And so that's the condition of the dollar. We have $35 trillion in debt at the federal level, and that's really an understatement because that doesn't include all the liabilities and the promises that we've made as a federal government. You know, if we as a federal government operated under generally accepted accounting principles, they'd be showing $135 trillion in debt. And now we've got 35 on the books that we announced. Well, that's in excess of our GDP. It is more than we've ever had. It's more than any nation in history has ever had. And the dollar has nothing behind it. It's not backed by gold. It's backed only by the full faith and confidence in the U.S. government and the willingness of foreign nations to buy that debt.
And that seems to be changing, too, right, as far as foreign nations willing to buy our debt. And there's this de-dollarization. Can you go into that a little bit, please?
Yeah, well, China, when I started working in the Pentagon in 2008, after the financial crisis, warning that we were in an economic war, we had a $10 trillion debt as Barack Obama took office. $10 trillion. And China held up to $1.2 trillion of that debt at any given time. So they were bouncing between $1 trillion and $1.2 trillion. So they had 10 to 12% ownership of our national debt. Today, they have about $800 to $900 billion of national debt, and our debt's ballooned to $35 trillion. So it's just went from 10 to 12% to just under 3%. They've been exiting the amount of money that they've been willing to lend to the United States. And that's something I predicted in the research I did for the Pentagon, but it's also something that the Chinese internally have said they were going to do. They promised that they were going to get off funding America, and they've done that. Other nations are doing it as well. Most central banks around the world have stopped buying U.S. dollars and instead are buying gold.
See, what's holding this up? I mean, this is something Steve and I have covered, and we've talked to others about it. And Steve, what's that book that we read, The Inflation Crisis by Semmelholtz, right? He wrote that.
You mean Age of Inflation by Hans Semmelholtz.
Hans Semmelholtz.
Which is somewhat dated now, but the principles are still correct.
So. Right. I don't know if you're familiar with that book, Kevin, but that was, I believe, 78, 79.
Yeah.
And he was warning in ways that we're hearing today. What has been holding us up? There's been all these warnings for decades. How have we not still experienced this collapse that everyone seems to be saying is coming?
Well, the United States government has made it a policy to protect the dollar's reserve currency of the world. And we've done a lot of things to protect that position, including policies during wartime and peacetime and so forth. We own most of the monetary, the big monetary conglomerates, International Monetary Fund and others. We've funded them. We've supported them. And we've used the SWIFT transaction system to cut people off. So for the longest time, we've exercised our power and authority as the world's sole superpower to preserve the position. But it's getting to the point where it's no longer going to be feasible. and that is when you have $35 trillion in debt. We're one failed bond auction away from a panic in the dollar. Right now, the dollar looks really good.
Yeah.
And people will argue that it's the cleanest dirty shirt in the laundry because the Federal Reserve is not planning on lowering interest rates immediately and so forth. But in the long run, the dollar is unsustainable, period. And it's not just me saying that. Jerome Powell says that our fiscal path is unsustainable, the government borrowing this much money. Well, the fiscal path, which is government spending and tax policy and so forth, that is what undergirds the faith and confidence of a government to support the dollar. It's not backed by gold. It's not backed by silver. It's backed by confidence in the government. Mm-hmm. And that confidence in the government's waning.
Well, what? I think the point that so few people understand is that government can only issue more debt if there are people willing to buy it at a reasonable rate. Okay, mm-hmm. And when that willingness disappears, you can print all the bonds you want, and if you can't sell them, you simply can't borrow any more money. And this is doubly critical because our entire currency system depends upon the ability of the Federal Reserve periodically via open market operations to take government debt that's out there and pay for it with new money. So they use debt also as the basis for creating new money. So if the day, when the evil day finally arrives, when foreign governments, potentates, sovereign wealth funds, and obviously billionaire investors and hedge funds around the world say, you know, we're either not going to borrow your money anymore or... Yeah, we'll borrow it, but we're going to want a 20% interest, you know, basically junk bond return rate or something, because we don't trust long term that you're not just going to print your way out of it. When that day arrives, then you're going to see an economic, you know, hailstorm the likes of which we've never seen before.
Kevin, when is that day arriving?
Not in the United States. We have seen that, though, in Zimbabwe, in Weimar Germany, in Argentina, in Venezuela, where the economies collapsed. They printed enormous amounts of currency and bonds and everything else. And then, you know, it gets to the point where the government then says, you have to buy our debt. It's the only safe and secure investment, so all IRAs can own nothing other than our debt. And when you get to that point, it collapses not just your currency markets, your bond markets, but also your stock markets and your economy as a result.
Well, Kevin, you mentioned Jerome Powell, and we've also covered, I believe, I'm not sure if it was the someone from Bank of America recently as well, and they were raising the alarm bells. I think the IMF just issued some sort of warning just this week that about our fiscal policy here. The U.S. government surely must know this is coming. What is your take as far as why we don't seem to be implementing any restrictions, any policies that would rein this craziness in so we don't fall off this cliff that you mentioned at the beginning there?
Well, one of the problems we're facing is that our promises that are mandatory spending, that's what they're called. It doesn't mean the Congress can't change it, but mandatory spending is about $4.64 trillion a year, and our total tax receipts are about $4.65 trillion. In other words, mandatory spending, which includes Social Security, Medicare, interest payments on the debt, and so forth, is going to take up every... So we could fire every government employee, we could close down every bureaucracy, we could shutter the Defense Department, and we still wouldn't barely break even as a nation. So the fiscal risk is so great. We just assume through the myth of dollar permanence that the government, well, you know, it's never hurt us before. And so we can continue to rack up and we'll just keep raising the debt limit ceiling. And that's what we've been doing.
Well, so they're not planning to implement, I mean, we can cut some programs, but you're saying that still wouldn't cover it. You also talk about in your presentations that this is going to be exploited for control. Can you talk about that a little bit more as far as CBDCs and what they do plan to do with this collapse? Because correct me if I'm wrong, but you do believe they see this collapse coming.
Well, certain elements absolutely see it coming. I'm not sure the politicians do. Both Republicans and Democrats have been profligate in their spending. But I interviewed, for my show on Economic War Room, I interviewed Dr. Peter McCullough yesterday. And we were talking about the health authorities, and the health authorities saw what he saw. He got, you know, blasted because he came out and said there's early treatment, but they had war gamed in event 201 exactly what the response would be. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly happened here. They've war gamed. How will they respond to the next financial crisis? When that happens, they're going to implement their strategy.
Sophia paused before the door. It read, Department of Bi-Digital Convergence. Just inside was a new world, a better world, the one of everlasting life, of no pain, of no loss, of no problem. She entered the chamber and her surroundings changed. She saw around her an infinite field of waving golden grain surmounted by cloudless blue sky. The AI voice whispered gently in her mind, Welcome to the singularity. She couldn't see it and couldn't feel it, but her body had almost instantly been covered by a swarm of tiny gray multi-legged bots that melted through her clothes and into her skin. Not perceiving the nightmare, her eyes had already been consumed and the rest of her body was dissolving as the bots digested her flesh. She felt only a warmth suffusing her being. Drowsy, she drifted to sleep, and her last thought was one of panic. Would she ever wake? Could a nightmare vision like this be an outcome of the much-hyped transhumanist technological singularity? Enter the world of the future as illuminated by the experience of the past in Endgame, the new book by Dennis Barrett, the publisher of The New American Magazine, and find out how the disastrous COVID pandemic response fits with the technocratic elite's thirst to create a transhumanist utopia. Get Endgame from shopjbs.org with free shipping with code ENDSHIP, ENDSHIP. Or get Endgame and the Great Reset Collector's Issue of The New American Magazine and get free shipping plus an additional 20% off both with code END20, END20.
That strategy, by the way, is central bank digital currencies. The point that they'll take is we're going to automatically force everyone off the United States dollar as we know it. We'll put it on government. They'll call it government Bitcoin or something like that. They'll talk about how convenient it is. And, you know, I think it's Executive Order 14067 where the Biden administration said we need to develop this. That way they can ramp up or down the money supply anytime, but they can also then go into a means of absolute draconian control over with a line item veto over the spending of any individual American. The money will not be owned by the people. It will be owned by the government and the banks that issue it. And then you'll have a use license right to use it as long as you don't violate the terms of service. And then they'll put in very draconian terms of service and they'll micromanage the economy that way. That's their solution to dealing with this extraordinary debt problem.
How close realistically do you think we are to technologically being able to achieve this? Because, you know, I lived in China for several years fairly recently, and there was a lot of talk about a digital UN. And as far as I know, they still haven't accomplished that. Try though they might, they were beta testing it sort of in some locales, but they're still quite a ways away from being able to go with it, you know, countrywide. I mean, a couple of small countries, Bermuda or Bahamas or something, that issued the sand dollar, which is a digital currency, but it's a tiny, tiny country with tiny, tiny finances. And so my question is, you know, realistically, given the size of the American economy and the dollar base that we're talking about, is it technologically feasible in 5 years, 10 years, 20 years? What's your take on that?
Well, a couple of things. One, we're dealing with government and the government that produced the website for Obamacare. And, you know, it was an inept failure at the beginning, but they forced it on all of us anyway. So governments, they're going to have glitches and problems and so forth. But that's not the issue. The issue is integration into the financial system because they can do it now. All of the technology exists to do this now, maybe not to have every layer of draconian control, but absolutely they have the ability. And I just interviewed I'll call him a whistleblower, someone that worked for a contractor that worked with the Bank of International Settlements. And they're talking about implementing it fairly soon. But the scary thing is he happened to speak a language that they didn't expect him to speak. And he overheard comments on how this will give central bankers control over everyday people's lives. It's the World Economic Forum. You'll own nothing by the year 2030 and you'll be happy. So I have no doubt that the intention is to get it to implement as quickly as possible. If Biden wins a second term, it'll happen during that second term. I have very little doubt to that. And it's all going to be in place by the year 2030.
I want to go back to this, but you said something very interesting. You called the rise in prices or inflation a necessary evil. Can you explain that?
Yeah, it actually is. I mean, people hate inflation. I hate inflation.
Yeah.
But if you give the government the unlimited printing press and then you locked all prices, mm-hmm. you cemented them in like Nixon tried to do with wage and price controls, and you said you cannot raise your prices, the government would have the ability to buy everything. They could buy every piece of food, they could buy every piece of property, they could buy gold, they could buy something, because it's locked in at price. I mean, that was the problem with gold and the confiscation of gold, is they confiscated it at $20 an ounce in 1933. And of course, the next year, FDR raised the price from $20 to $35, making this enormous profit for the United States government holding everybody's gold.
Yeah.
And if they locked in our price on everything, without inflation, they would own everything. They just print the money and buy it.
But doesn't inflation also make the rich richer and the poor poorer?
Yes. Inflation is an evil, period.
Yeah.
And wealthy, it's the Cantillon effect. Wealthy people can hedge against inflation quite effectively. Poor people are trying it, by the way. There was an article in Bloomberg yesterday where it said that people were using their gold, physical gold that they held, as an ATM machine, and record amounts were being turned in at pawn shops to get their money out of it, because things have gotten tight due to inflation. It costs more to feed your family, rent's gone up, everything's gone up, gasoline's gone up, and so where do you get money? So they're selling their gold as an ATM machine. That's why we have this solution, which I know we'll get to, on pirate money, but the bottom line is gold has not only held its value, it's gone up in value.
Yeah.
A perfect example, 1920s, you could buy for 10 kilogram bars of gold, you could buy a really nice house. Mm-hmm. That was true in the 1920s. It was worth about $7,500, and the average house was $5,000. Today, you can buy 10 kilogram gold bars, will buy you about a $750,000 house. So gold has held its value.
What was the reasoning? How did they legitimize first getting off of gold, and then there was silver? I think it was all precious metals later on. What was the legitimate reason for that, or at least the reason they that
the
was
rationale given,
the rationale yes.
Okay, so when the Federal Reserve Act was established, and I recently went to Jekyll Island to see where it was formed, and I've reached out to Edward Griffin. You know, I want to interview him on my show. I haven't heard back, but the original rationale was the dollar would be backed by gold, 40% gold. And then we had the Treasury issued silver certificates where you could exchange for silver and get a dollar's worth of silver. In 1933, the courts allowed the confiscation of gold because FDR claimed that gold was being hoarded during the Great Depression, and people were hoarding it and holding on to it, and it wasn't transacting any longer. And then in 1971, we left the gold standard entirely where it wasn't. Individuals starting from 1933 to 1971, you couldn't take your Federal Reserve note in and get gold out of the Federal Reserve. But sovereign nations, foreign countries could. For example, France could go in and say, hey, here are our dollars. We want it. It's backed by gold. Give us our gold. But in 1971, Charles de Gaulle said, this dollar is going to become worthless. Inflation is rising in America. Therefore, we want all of our dollars converted to gold. And then Nixon closed the gold window. And so it was a national emergency. Said it was a temporary basis. We'd return to gold soon enough, but stop the convertibility of gold. At the same time, that ended the convertibility of the Treasury certificates, which looked like dollar bills, into silver. From 1971 to the present, our money has lost about 90% of its purchasing power because it's no longer backed by gold or even silver.
Would any of that been possible without the creation of the Federal Reserve?
Well, we had unbacked money called greenbacks during the Civil War, and they were deemed unconstitutional in a court decision, I think 1868 or 69, which was Hepburn versus Griswold. And then it said no paper money unless it's backed by something. And then Ulysses S. Grant packed the court, and in Knox versus Lee, like a year later, overturned that decision, saying that you could do it. So it's possible we would have had unbacked paper money, but people objected to it. They said this is wrong. When the Federal Reserve entered, they took over control, and states no longer issued their own currency. And bottom line is, it consolidated the authority and power, making it easier for the confiscation of gold.
Well, I mean, and so they had tried to implement a central bank here in the United States, at least since the years before Andrew Jackson, and he had recognized the evil of it. And then they finally got one in there. I want to go into, you go around and you have an answer to this. And so I want to get into that. You talk about pirate money. What in the world is pirate money? Sounds a little suspect there, Kevin.
Well, pirate money, by the way, pirates have gotten a bad rap. Pirates helped us win the American Revolution. John Paul Jones himself was listed officially, and to this day in the British Naval journals, lists John Paul Jones, the founder of the American Navy, he was a pirate. And pirates helped us in the War of 1812. So pirates are getting a bad rap in this.
I've never heard that.
The reason I use the name pirate money is because when I say gold doubloons and pieces of eight, what do you think? You think pirates, right? Captain Jack Sparrow or Long John Silver. Well, when the Constitution was written and adopted in 1787, they used the term dollar in the Constitution as the unit of account for American money.
Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. The Declaration of Independence proclaims God-given rights, and we intend to protect them. Working with people like you for over 50 years, preserving freedom and building a better tomorrow. Safeguarding the Constitution by limiting government power. We are restoring liberties, educating voters, and leading the freedom movement. Join with us. United, we will defend our rights. We are all Americans. We are the John Birch Society.
And what they were referencing was a Spanish milled dollar. It's 0.7734 troy ounces of fine silver. And they said in Article 1, Section 10, no state shall make anything other than gold and silver coins tender in that state. They were literally referencing gold doubloons and pieces of eight, which were the reserve currency of the world at the time, Spanish mill dollars and Spanish gold doubloons. And I keep those because that's a reminder of George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, Alexander Hamilton. You ask them what real money is, they would say those things. In fact, if you got a Continental note from 1776, when the Continental Army was getting their pay, they got a Continental note. It says, payable to the bearer four Spanish milled dollars or the equivalent value thereof in gold and silver. So I use that historic reference of gold doubloons and silver pieces of eight. And by the way, a silver piece of eight is also known as a peso or a Spanish mill dollar, and they'd cut it into eight literal pie-shaped pieces. Each one was a bit. And so if you heard the term, you know, shaving a haircut two bits or whatever, that is what it is. It was 1/8 of a dollar, and two of those made a quarter, and our modern quarter is built around that concept. Quarter of a dollar was two bits.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so now you're bringing this concept to as a way to restore money here in America. And is this something that's going to be able to stand when this collapse comes? And how does it work?
All right, so it is based on the Constitution. So it's not really my concept. The Constitution says that a state can have its own currency as long as it's gold and silver coin. And by the way, then they said a state cannot coin its own money. Same thing, say Article 1, Section 10, a state can't coin money. A state can't emit bills of credit, which would be paper money that's unbacked fiat money, but a state can make gold and silver coin. In other words, a state had that recourse. We're going to only accept gold doubloons and pieces of eight as payment of debts, and we're going to make them legal tender in our state. That was just in case the federal government went off the rails and the federal government started doing what we're doing now, which is unbacked paper money. The founders hated paper money. George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, Alexander Hamilton, James Madison, they all said we hate paper money. But a state can make gold and silver coin, and that was done as late as like 1837. The Bank of Kentucky would take gold and silver coins on deposit and say, I know it's clunky to carry around this. It's hard to shave off a tiny bit of gold or a tiny bit of silver to pay for something. So we'll take them on deposit and we will issue notes that are immediately exchangeable in this. And the Supreme Court considered whether or not that was legitimate and legal. And they said, as long as they kept one for one reserve of gold and silver to match those notes they were issuing, it was completely constitutional. So we took that concept and just modernized it. All we did was we added the modern technology to it and said, what if you got, instead of pieces of paper, you got a debit card, and we used electronic calculations to keep track of your allocated gold. So I put 2 ounces of gold in the Texas Bullion Depository in Leander, Texas, which is a real thing. It's a government entity. You can look texasbulliondepository.gov and you can go and deposit stuff there. But what if I put 2 ounces of gold there? It would be worth approximately $4,800 as we're talking now in U.S. dollars. And then I wanted to go spend it, and I went out for a nice meal with my wife, and I spent, you know, at the meal, I spent $100. I would pay for it with a MasterCard debit card, and they would just take the amount of gold out that represented that dollar amount, and they would pay the restaurant. Or the restaurant could say, I just want to keep it in gold. And so they just take that dollar equivalent amount of gold out of my account and move it to their account. Well, if gold goes up in value, which it's done since I put my money on a commercial version of this called Glint, as gold goes up in value, my purchasing power is either retained or enhanced. And so this exists today. The technology's there. The Constitution allows it. And we're working in 25 states to get legislation enacted to make this legal tender in the state, which has huge benefits. If it's legal tender and functional money under the IRS code, you don't get taxed if the if you have a price appreciation and you liquidate your asset either by selling it or by spending it.
I assume you must be getting pushback from federal authorities on this.
Well, they have very little basis to push back. We've gotten complaints and we've gotten people sent into our hearings at the state level. But there are Supreme Court decisions that support this that date back, you know, in 20th century and 19th century that I've all explained in the book Pirate Money. You can see a copy of Pirate Money here that say Lane County versus Oregon was a great, brilliant decision. Oregon said, when greenbacks were circulating around the country, unbacked paper federal money that said legal tender on the face of the paper, the state of Oregon says, we don't want taxes collected in unbacked paper money. We think it'll be worthless. Therefore, you only collect taxes in gold and silver. And Lane County was collecting in gold and silver, but wanted to pay in greenbacks. They wanted to pay the state of Oregon in greenbacks. And it went all the way up to the U.S. Supreme Court, and the ruling was this. The ruling was that that the federal government, the Congress, the courts, and no bureau of the federal government had any authority to interfere with a state's right to make gold and silver coin legal tender. And if functional money, like I mentioned earlier, that wasn't in this court ruling, but in a different ruling, if functional money, then you could be exempt from tax. So we feel like we're on pretty solid ground.
Well, you mentioned that the states recognize this. Correct me if I'm wrong. The states can recognize gold and silver as legal tender, but that's not necessarily the same federally, is it? And wouldn't there be a conflict?
The states can recognize gold and silver as legal tender, and many states have done that. They've just not made it functional money yet. If the federal government says it's not legal tender, it's irrelevant. The Constitution, Article 1, Section 10 says a state may make nothing other than gold and silver legal tender. And the courts have ruled and sided with the states, regardless of what the federal government says. If a state says that, that is their one authority. They can't make Bitcoin legal tender. They actually can't even make Federal Reserve notes legal tender in the state, although they can agree to use them. But they don't have constitutional authority. They have to go under the federal authority to use Federal Reserve notes. But gold and silver are separate from that authority and clearly enumerated in the Constitution as a state authority.
Glint, is this the app?
Yeah, you can get Glint Pay on your iPhone or on your Android device. And in fact, the CEO of Glint's become a good friend. He's gone with me to numerous states to testify in legislatures. We testified in Utah and had a great advance in Utah, where the state of Utah is now able to buy gold with their rainy day fund. It was fought, it was argued, it was, you know, everybody went against it, but it passed. My friend Ken Ivory got the legislation passed, and now Treasurer Marlo Oakes, who's also a friend in Utah, is going to take some of their rainy day money under law, signed into law by the governor, and they're going to invest in gold. Jason Cousins, the founder of Glint, has traveled with me to show and prove the technology works. Now, we're technology agnostic. A state, if they want to build their own, they can. If they want to go to some of the competitors of Glint, like there's Kinesis and a few others that say they can do the same thing. But I know Glint works. I've used it myself, and Jason Cousins has become a friend. It is Glint Pay, the app. Yes.
Okay. So you're if I can maybe distill what you're saying here is, you don't really see a likelihood that the federal government is going to avoid bankruptcy, you know, dollar collapse and so forth. However, the saving grace would appear to be that on the state and the private individual level, there may be, you know, individuals and state governments and so forth that will survive, because by that time they will have created viable currencies of their own once again and will be able to stave, you know, avoid the same fate that's kind of the Damoclean fate that's hanging over the federal government. Is that what you're saying, in effect?
That's all right. So my friend, another friend that I spoke with recently was from Argentina, and he talked about when his dad would get paid, he would have to race to the bank, cash it, turn the cash around, and immediately go spend it for groceries because grocery prices would go up the next day. In this case, we'd have an all-gold economy issued by a state where you could be paid in gold, and then you could buy your groceries in gold, and you wouldn't have to have that huge transition problem.
In 1988, the John Birch Society produced a documentary so predictive, it's as though they had a time machine. Out of Control, Immigration Invasion was produced and hosted by investigative reporter William F. Jasper and looks at the growing problem of unrestricted illegal immigration that, in 1988, already saw upwards of 10 to 20 million illegal aliens within the borders of the U.S. Unknown agents from around the world using the southern border as easy entry. Certainly, some are innocent families escaping hardship, but also certainly some are criminals, potentially terrorists. Is it not appropriate that there be some criteria for the entry of any sovereign nation? Why should the U.S. be different than Canada, Germany, Russia, Japan, or every other country on the planet? Out of Control, Immigration Invasion. Watch this time capsule of prescient wisdom at thenewamerican.com/out of control.
So the bottom line is, yes, a state can make gold and silver currency in their state, and it could be an alternative economy that operates. When Zimbabwe's currency failed, what happened is they went to a dollar-based economy, and so people just started trading in dollars. In this case, if the dollar were to fail, people would have that option to immediately go to gold and silver issued by a state.
Does this imply then politically, in your view, that the collapse of the dollar, national insolvency that we're contemplating, would inevitably then involve the breakup of the union as we know it? That you would have certain states, perhaps Texas and Florida and others, that would be well positioned to be the political heirs of the United States, but absent a federal government, that the republic would fall apart in effect.
Well, potentially. I mean, there are certainly political answers other than that. For example, if we massively inflate, if the dollar falls in value, what that essentially does means is that debt that they've issued, it can be paid off fairly easily. And I'll give you an example. My parents bought a $50,000 house in 1971. You know, it'd be a $500,000 house today. But the debt that they agreed to then in 1971, you know, could be paid off very easily. It's less than the down payment you would need today. So the massive federal debt, if we did reorganize politically, it's entirely possible. And it's possible that we could go on another 5 or 10 or 15 years and just continue to raise debt. So I don't know that it's inevitable that the nation collapses. But your point is an interesting one, because a guy named Igor Panarin, who's a buddy of Vladimir Putin, was quoted in the Wall Street Journal in 2008, and I've saved the article. He said that if things weren't bad enough, a Russian professor predicts the end of America, and it showed America dividing into five different nations. The Northeast went to Europe, the northern middle went to Canada, the western states went to China, Texas and Florida went, kind of brought Mexico in. It was an interesting division, and Hawaii and went, I think Hawaii went to China as well. But it was an interesting view that, and they said, based on mass immigration, moral degradation, and the Ponzi scheme of the American dollar, that's why America would collapse. So it is entirely possible that, Steve, what you suggested is what does happen. I don't know the timing on it. It could have happened 2 years ago, or it could happen 10 years from now. But it doesn't have to happen. There are ways that the union can hold together. There are political solutions that might be, we have to restart the debt, and you issue a new currency and a new dollar. You do a new, Bretton Woods, we've been through many monetary massive changes. And maybe that's why central banks around the world are buying gold. Maybe we return back to a global gold standard.
Well, that was going to be my follow-up question then. Do you think that it is feasible to contemplate, in effect, reversing what happened in 1971 and 1933 and restoring either a gold standard or, I mean, constitutionally, it has to be a bimetallic standard or something to return to actual a sound currency? Is that even feasible, given the volume, sheer volume of dollars and debt that's out there, in contrast to the total stockpiles of gold and, indeed, silver?
Yeah, I think it is feasible for a couple of reasons. One is the dollar will devalue to such a degree that, an ounce of gold will now buy $2,400, and a few years ago it buy, at the start of this century, it bought $300. So yeah, and it adjusts just like Bitcoin. People think we can run the world economy on Bitcoin. There will only be 21 million Bitcoin ever produced. So yes, I think that's entirely possible. But I want to address your other point. You said bimetal standard, and I agree with you. I think you're 100% right. But few people realize that in the late 19th century, that we were on a gold standard only. After the greenbacks were ended, and after Knox versus Lee said it's okay for the federal government to have unbacked currency, the people demanded we return to something behind the paper dollar, and they turned to gold and gold only. And William Jennings Bryan argued vociferously that we should have a bimetal standard. And he said, don't crucify us on a cross of gold. In other words, we have to have poor man's gold, silver in the mix. And there was a book that was written by L. Frank Baum right around the start of the 20th century. I think it was 1900.
And
it was
titled The Wizard of Oz?
Wonderful Wizard. That's the book.
The same guy?
Wizard of Oz. And it talks about a bimetal standard. It really was an economic allegory. You may know this. A few people do that I meet, but occasionally I'll meet people who understand. He was arguing the yellow brick road, that was a gold standard. And Dorothy was supposed to be wearing silver slippers, not gold, not ruby, silver color, but MGM changed it for Technicolor, wearing silver slippers and traveling the yellow brick road. You learn that the wizard in the Emerald City, which was the greenback, had nothing behind the curtain. There was no power there or authority there whatsoever. Mm-hmm. The bankers in the Northeast were the Wicked Witch. The flying monkeys were the lawyers trying to enforce the banker power. Toto was the teetotalers. The farmers were scarecrows. The cowardly lion was William Jennings Bryan, and the tin man was the factory worker. All of that was an economic allegory in the book, The Wonderful Wizard of Oz.
I did not know that. I used to be a big fan of L. Frank Baum when I was a kid.
That is crazy. I didn't know that either. I want to go back to these 25 states. I mean, are officials in these states, they seem to be pretty receptive. At least that's what you're insinuating. They're receptive to implementing real money, sound money. Does that mean that they're also aware of this coming collapse? Are they concerned?
Well, I tell you, it depends on the state and depends on the legislator. And it's been a struggle to educate people, but we're gaining new fans every day. They do under this 25 states. If you want to know which states they are, you can go to transactionalgold.com and you can see those states. But I'll just roughly tell you, it's the same states that said to Texas, if you want to protect your border, we'll stand with you and we'll show up.
Right.
That's what we expected.
Yeah, it's those states. And we're gaining adherence. You know, it's a long education process. And sometimes there are interests like bankers and others who come in and say, I don't know if we should do this. That's a little scary and so forth. But we're making progress.
Are you talking to their legislatures or their AGs or all the above, depending how you could get in and have these conversations?
Yeah, we've been to the treasurers mostly, but also the attorney generals in various states, and a lot of senators and congressmen, senators and House members.
Assembly members.
We are, though, picking up Democrats just as, not to the same degree, but certainly Democrats believe in economic justice. I wrote a whole chapter about economic justice in the book Pirate Money, because poor people and middle class, they're shut out. Rich people can hedge against inflation. Poor and middle class, they have a lot harder time doing so.
Well, this is I guess this is encouraging. I mean, because to hear that there's a solution. Tell us more about where people can find you, what you got available for others to learn, and as far as maybe where people can, if they need to book you or they want to bring you in for a presentation.
Yeah, so economicwarroom.com is the first stop to see our show on Blaze Television. We have a radio program that airs nationally called Pirate Money Radio, Saturday mornings on American Family Radio. My books are offered there. But we also have specific websites like piratemoneybook.com or accordingtoplanbook.com, which talks about the elite secret plan to take over America. So there are a lot of different places to follow. My Twitter feed, and so forth. But you can start at economicwarroom.com, and from there you'll find just about everything you want to see. 5 years of the Economic War Room show.
Well, Kevin, did you have something else you want to add? Kevin, we really appreciate what you're doing there. We appreciate you coming on, and we wish you the best.
Yeah, great stuff.
Yes, and the best of luck to you. And feel free to reach out if you feel there's something else we need to get you on to help spread the word. You're doing great work, and we hope that the union doesn't fall apart. That's for
sure.
We
certainly
right?
do.
That's
hope that's for what, the best, but prepare for the worst.
Yeah, that's what we work on. By the way, we were the original publishers of G. Edward Griffin's Creature from Jekyll Island. I don't know if you were aware of that, but
if you can connect me to Edward Griffin, G. Edward Griffin, I would love to interview him. He's one of my personal heroes.
We'll try. We don't have a lot of connection right now.
But we'll see what we can do. Thank you, Kevin, and thank you everyone for tuning in to another episode of New American Daily. Remember to visit thenewamerican.com for more Truth Behind the News, and we'll see you Monday.